Before AI can help your business predict demand, accelerate growth, inform decisions, automate tasks, reveal insights, generate content, you have to trust it. Introducing WatsonX Governance, helping you govern any AI as data, models, and policies change so you can scale it responsibly. Let's create AI that begins with trust with WatsonX Governance. Learn more at ibm.com/governance. IBM, let's create.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind, listener mail. My name is Robert Lamb. Here we are again.
And I'm Joe McCormick, and it's Monday, the day of each week that we read back messages from the Stuff to Blow Your Mind email address. If you have never gotten in touch with the show before, you should. Email us at contact@stufftoblowyourmind.com. We appreciate any kind of feedback to the show or just anything interesting you'd like to share. We especially like it if you have something fascinating to add to a topic we've recently covered on the show. Let's see, Rob, I think I'm going to kick things off today with one of these messages in response to our series on dust.
Let's do it.
So one of the things we talked about in part 5 of that series was about dust storms and about the threat dust storms pose to machinery and vehicles. You don't want to drive in a dust storm, but you also just don't want to get too much dust into your vehicle engine and stuff. And Thatcher writes in on that topic. Thatcher says, hello. You talked about dust damaging vehicles in your part 5 episode. I wanted to add that dust can clog air intake filters very quickly. My friend was a first responder on 9/11, and when he drove his truck home afterward, he noticed that it had reduced power and wasn't performing the way it usually does. When he checked the air intake filter to the engine, it was completely clogged with concrete dust from the Twin Towers. I wonder if any other listeners have had similar experiences. Thank you for a wonderful show. I've been listening for many, many years, and I look forward to each episode every week. Thatcher.
Oh, wow. That's quite a story there.
Yeah, obviously for how it connects to 9/11, but also I wonder if different types of dust have different sort of engine clogging or machinery wrecking powers, like if concrete dust is of a finer grain than the standard kind of dust you'd get blowing in say, a natural dust storm coming off the desert or something. I don't know for sure. But yeah, that's interesting either way. And one of many reasons not to drive in clouds of dust.
All right, this next one comes to us from Jeff, and I think this one's kind of dual purpose, gets into a little bit of dust and a little bit of Weird House Cinema. The subject line is Dust, Wind, Dude. Jeff writes, greetings, science, humans. Just wanted to thank you again for the variety of topics you investigate on your shows. It's probably the greatest era of Earth history for laundry and other chores. My primary interest in Saharan dust is the way it activates cheat mode for sunset photography. You don't have to have nice equipment or much skill. You don't have to be on the shore or at altitude Just point your phone west at golden hour with an appealingly shaped something silhouetted in the foreground for a spectacular photo with a brilliant orange background. Turns a quick snap of a telephone pole or a corner convenience store into frameable art. In other dusty news, I always thought the Sandman was an explanation for the gross sand in your eyes when you wake up. I also wanted to thank you for opening up old memories of Dragon Slayer. Unlike some of the other 80s movies you featured, I hadn't thought much of it since those endless summers of HBO couch time. I haven't played YouTube clips of favorite scenes, hunted down the soundtrack, IMDb'd which actor played the wizard, etc. Those memories were all locked away, waiting to be reactivated by your show. The moments that immediately jumped into my mind were telling. The horrible baby dragons devouring the sacrifice, the hero levitating the egg, thus proving he actually did have access to real magic, the half second of partial nudity during the reveal scene at the pond, smashing the amulet for the win. What I definitely didn't process back then was the parallel between the old wizard sizing up the value of the remainder of his life and the dragon doing the same, putting their energy into the generation to come. Jeff continues here. He says, time is a relentless B word. This is the longer of the two B words. I'll let you figure out the rest. Just out of an abundance of caution, we don't want to get flagged or labeled with anything on any of the podcast publication systems without, you know, due reason.
I think we're getting raided by AI or something.
Yeah. Anyway, Jeff says, as is often highlighted when you're doing the connection segment and you note how many of the people involved are no longer with us. I'll think that can't be right, but add 40 years to the average age of a competent artist and you're bound to see a fair bit of that. On a happier note, thanks for featuring Return to Oz on Weird House. I must have passed on it when I was a kid since the original somehow never made much of an impression on me. I've always been allergic to musicals. However, after watching the delightful 80s movie on your recommendation, I've since read all of the original L. Frank Baum Oz books as well as some of his other works. The movie had the benefit of being based on the second and third Oz books, which I thought were the best. They aren't exactly great literature, but they are fun reads, and it's fascinating trying to figure out what was going on in Baum's mind as he wrote them. He led an interesting life and had interesting friends. What was he trying to tell the children? The running dialogue he had with his fans in the preface of each book was almost as entertaining as the stories themselves. After a while, Baum got sick of writing about Oz. He wrote other sorts of stories, but they didn't sell as well. He tried Oz books with different protagonists, but the kids constantly bombarded him with letters saying, "That's nice, but what are Dorothy and Toto up to?" He seemed increasingly exasperated as the series went on, but kept a sense of humor about it. Sometimes he would drop Dorothy and other fan favorites into an unrelated story, the same way Marvel editors used to try to punch up sales by adding Wolverine to a given title. Oh, I mean, now I'm excited about Wolverine and Oz. Someone's done it, I'm sure. So write in and tell us about it. The fan interaction reminded me of old-school comic book letters pages. Baum's books actually had a lot of shared DNA with comics, including crossovers, shared universes, and retcons. The explanation for why Toto didn't speak in the first book when other mundane animals gained the ability to talk in Oz gave me one of the better laughs in the series.
I love that Jeff alludes to that, but then doesn't tell us what the explanation is.
Was there an explanation? They didn't get into it in Return to Oz, did they? I don't recall.
Recall. The chicken talks, doesn't it?
Yeah. Anyway, Jeff continues. He probably also responded to parental feedback in that the Tin Woodman and the Cowardly Lion become much less murderous as the series continues. They have a pretty high kill count in the early books, but the stories remain superbly weird. Once the rule is established that no one can die in Oz itself, Baum goes full Cronenberg with the possibilities of characters who can be carved up without experiencing the sweet release of death. The original story of the Tin Woodsman and its ramifications are most horrible, in a fun way. One king would punish subjects by having two people cut in half lengthwise and the mismatched parts sewn together. Both beings retained their sense of self and led a miserable existence in control of only one half of their body, with the other's thoughts intruding upon their own. There are also more beasts who fling their own heads at our heroes. Lots of monster fact material in those books. Well, good to know. Thanks again for continuing to direct us to new piles of weirdness to explore. Jeff.
Man, love a beast that throws its own head.
Absolutely. Oh, well, there's a lot of great stuff in this this feedback. I will say on the connections, you know, note in older movies, yeah, it can be a little sad, a little sobering, you know, to look at a the cast and crew for a film and realize that like everybody's dead. Like sometimes it's, you'll know, the cast, it'll be everybody's dead except for the child actors or maybe, and or maybe one of the leading ladies, that sort of thing. I don't know. It's just, that's how it goes. But
especially when it doesn't feel like an especially old movie.
Yeah. Yeah. It's true. I mean, yeah, some of these folks die relatively young. But on the other hand, it's also kind of refreshing when we cover a movie and I'm going through the connections. I'm like, oh, I think everybody's alive. It happens every now and then. It's like winning at bingo.
I do think this is funny hearing about Baum getting the same kinds of messages that fans are like posting to internet forums and on Twitter today about their favorite comic book movies or whatever. It's that like, I didn't like that this character wasn't included. How can it be that the animals talk in Oz, but this animal doesn't talk? Doesn't make any sense.
You know, I don't think I've ever read any of his work. So, but be, occasionally emails like this, recommendations from various folks, makes me want to check it out. It does sound fabulously weird.
Now, as to Jeff's note about wondering if the story of the Sandman putting sand in a child's eyes to make them sleep, the explanation you gave in the episode, Rob, made a lot of sense to me because, you know, sand would make you rub your eyes and you rub your eyes when you're sleepy. Mm-hmm. Steve also agreed with this explanation of it basically having to do with eye crud. So Steve wrote in and said, "Hi, Robin, Joe, it's been a while, but in listening to your Sandman discussions from The Very Dust, I remembered a question I never found an answer to in my childhood. When I was a little boy, the first time I woke up with eye crust in the corners of my eyes, I asked my mom, is this sand? Is this why people used to talk about the Sandman? She did not know. I still wonder if there's a connection to the myth or folktale." Then Steve provides a link and asks if we can confirm or dismiss his hypothesis. Steve, I doubt we can settle this one for you. But you and Jeff are thinking on the same frequency.
Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product and yeah, it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astapro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astapro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can get Astapro and go today. Astepro allergy.com. Astapro and go. Use as directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles in a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Is getting gas at Chevron burning a hole in your wallet? What if I told you you can easily earn cash back while you fill up? Introducing Drop, the app that turns every fill up into a reward. With Drop, you'll earn points to get free gift cards every time you fill up your tank. Download Drop and use code DROP77 to instantly receive $5 in points to jumpstart your savings journey. Don't miss out on turning your gas expenses into something rewarding.
Okay, Rob, do you mind if I read this message from Louisa?
Yeah, let's have it.
Okay, Louisa says, "Hi, guys. Who would have thought that something as mundane as dust would be interesting enough for 5 episodes? Only you. I kept putting this email off, expecting you to talk about dust in literature, but you either still have to release part 6 or that's it for the series." That is it for the series for now. We're done for now. Louisa says, "Just in case you don't get around to it, I would like to remind you of the role that dust plays in George Orwell's 1984. In the plot, dust plays a symbolic part and is all-pervasive, just as much as Big Brother. The main character, Winston, begins the book feeling protected by it and ends up feeling completely overwhelmed. It is everywhere, and it also represents his own unraveling. I cannot find a better literary use of dust in a plot." Yeah, I do remember a lot of references to dust in 1984. I think Winston talks about his neighbor in his apartment building, Mrs. Parsons, having creases in her face that always looked as if dust was trapped in the creases. And it's like a detail he mentions over and over, as if it represents some kind of like decay of life itself. You know, there's this just kind of like ash and grime building up on our bodies. And there's one part where Winston is thinking about sort of the general hopelessness of life under the party and Big Brother. And he describes London as, quote, "vast and ruinous, a city of a million dustbins." I think that's a really striking image. It's like it selects as the defining object of a civilization the place where waste is discarded. And it actually reminds me of those visions of the underworld of the dead in the Epic of Gilgamesh, you know, the house of dust, where dust is their food and clay is their bread. But anyway, to come back to Louisa's message, Louisa says, "I can, however, tell you that I used to think dust was the bane of my domestic existence until I had German Shepherds. Every time the female sheds, it's like brushing out another dog from her. I'm seriously considering buying a loom and making dog thread." Wait, didn't in one of the episodes we talked about like, you know, boutique clothing made out of dust bunnies?
We discussed the possibility.
Maybe I brought it up and you shamed me for doing so.
I don't remember shaming you.
I deserve to be shamed.
I have questions about how it would work, but yes.
Let's see. Louisa says, "Thanks so much as always for your wonderful work. Best regards, Louisa." Oh, and then she attaches a picture of the hair from her dog Alma. This is the hair shed in one sitting. That is truly, wow, that's a lot of hair. But I know a lot about shedding dogs. I've had my share of shedding dogs in my life too, and they can shed a storm.
Yeah, that's a lot. I have to stay on top of our cat with the Furminator, but still not quite this much fur comes out.
Does your cat like the Furminator?
Well, she loves the brush, and then she'll tolerate the Furminator. So I'll use the Furminator and the brush at the same time, one in each hand. And it's kind of a careful dance. It used to be even more of a dance because she would get so riled up that she would also try and scratch me. But she's older now. She's a little slower, so I can usually stay on top of her her overexcited aggressions. All right, this next one comes to us from Mike. Mike says, "I love the 4 dust episodes. In episode 4, when you were talking about Sandman's dust, I immediately thought about Neil Gaiman's Sandman comic. The comic is about an entity called Dream and his realm, the Dreaming. In the early issues, he has to track down some of his tools that were stolen from him. In issue 3, and also episode 3 of the television adaptation, Dream's bag of dream dust falls into the hands of an innocent woman who becomes helplessly addicted to the dreams and fantasies that the dream dust gives her. She ends up more or less wasting away because she wants to spend more time in the dream than in real life. It's an excellent read with some pretty disturbing imagery. Thanks for the podcast. Stuff to Blow Your Mind is the podcast I recommend to most people, Mike." The good note, Mike. We didn't mention the Sandman comic or the Netflix adaptation in these episodes, but both are excellent. I was a fan of the comic back when I read it years ago, and I really did enjoy the Netflix adaptation as well. I thought it had a great cast, very well put together. I seem to recall that David S. Goyer is involved in that as well, but has a tremendous cast, though.
I am not familiar with it.
Oh, well, treat yourself. It's good stuff.
May get there someday. Goes on the list with everything else. All right, this next message is in response to the series we did on the Egyptian god Osiris. This comes from Constantinos. Constantinos says, "Good day, gentlemen. I enjoyed your episode on Osiris and have two comments. These are big topics, but I'll try to be as succinct as possible. Part one, a slice of PIE, that stands for Proto-Indo-European. The first is that any Greek attestment to Egyptian origins of Greek mythology has to be taken with a grain of salt. I think that Greeks, like Herodotus, who cited Egyptian mythological roots, were simply overreaching and letting conjecture get the better of them." Oh yeah, this connects to the idea that maybe the Greek gods were in some sense the same as the Egyptian gods and just different names for them, or maybe a later take on a similar view is that the idea that the Greek mythology evolved from the Egyptian mythology, which some people have proposed. And Constantinos here is saying that that is not likely the case. So he says, here is a mainstream academic view of Greek mythology origins in summary. One, Proto-Indo-Europeans migrated from the Russian steppes to Greece. Proto-Indo-European settlers were pastoralists, their economy centered around cattle. Meanwhile, the indigenous Greeks were an agricultural society. We know precious little about the Proto-Indo-Europeans and indigenous Greeks, but the Proto-Indo-European settlers brought the Greek language to Greece. Proto-Indo-European settlers brought their pastoral gods, Zeus et al., and melded them into the indigenous people's agricultural gods, Demeter et al., and together they created the Olympian pantheon. There are other non-Proto-Indo-European and non-indigenous influences on Greek mythology, parentheses, Apollo, question mark, maybe Dionysus. The latter's origin is still controversial. But they seem more Anatolian, maybe Cypriot and Cretan, than Egyptian. I tend to view Greek mythology as a sedimentary rock with layers upon layers of development rather than one single thing. Anyway, there does not seem to be a lot of evidence for direct imports of Egyptian myths during the early formative phases of the Greek mythos, but that is not to say that it did not happen. We just have clearer paths to other places. Part 2. Resurrecting the resurrecting gods debate. This is a reference to us bringing up the question of whether Osiris and other gods from the ancient world should be thought of as gods that die and then rise again in the way that, say, Jesus or maybe some of the figures from other mystery religions would be said to die and rise again. And Constantinos is about to bring up one of the gods of one of these mystery religions. He says, "I'm surprised that your discussion on resurrecting gods did not include Dionysus and Orpheus. Again, this is a huge subject, but I will try to just hit the high points. The god Dionysus was killed and torn apart by evil titans at the direction of the goddess Hera. Athena saved Dionysus's heart and Zeus resurrects him. Orpheus may have been the name of a religious figure from northern Greece. Regardless of whether he existed, Orpheus is credited as being the prophet that founded a mystery cult centered around the resurrected Dionysus. Orphists believed that humans are born of the original sin, parentheses, the dust of the burnt titans, but also have a divine spark, the soul. Long story short, be good and your soul gets to heaven, the Elysian fields. Orphism is old and foundational to Western religious traditions. In fact, the oldest surviving European written text, the 4th century BC Derveni Papyrus, is an Orphic hymn. Many have drawn direct lines from Orphism to Neoplatonism and Christianity. It is a deep rabbit hole to go down, and the case is compelling. Its links to Christianity aside, Dionysus is demonstrably one of the earliest resurrecting gods that did indeed spawn a religion centered on his resurrection. Hope you found that interesting. Thank you all for a lovely podcast that I cannot stop recommending to any that will listen. Cheers."
Oh, that's excellent. You know, I do think we could come back in the future and do a proper Orpheus or Dionysus podcast series, you know, focusing, because, you know, we do love our deep dives into mythology. All right, we're going to go ahead and close up the mailbag here. We had some that we didn't have time to get to today, but we will come back to those in a future installment of Listener Mail. So keep them coming. We'd love to hear from you on episodes past, episodes present, or episodes future, your recommendations and so forth. And if you're on the fence, if you're like, I'm kind of thinking about writing into the show, but I've never done it before. I don't know if this is interesting enough. Go ahead and give it a shot. We'd love to hear from you regardless. And we do read everything, even if we don't read everything on Listener Mail, and even though we don't respond to everything via email, we do read it. So it's the best way to get in touch with us, the best way to share your enthusiasm, and the best way to share any feedback, constructive feedback about the show itself. Though don't be shy about throwing some positive reviews and some stars our way wherever you get the podcast. We'll remind you that Listener Mail airs on Mondays in the Stuff to Blow Your Mind podcast feed, core episodes on Tuesdays and Thursdays, short form episode on Wednesdays, and on Fridays we set aside most serious concerns to just talk about a weird film on Weird House Cinema.
Huge thanks, as always, to our excellent audio producer, JJ Posway. If you would like to get in touch with us with feedback on this episode or any other, to suggest a topic for the future, or just to say hi, you can email us at contact@stufftoblowyourmind.com.
Stuff to Blow Your Mind is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Tired of routine Walgreens trips? Get rewarded for shopping with Drop. With Drop, you can earn free gift cards on groceries, gas, and more. Download Drop now and use code DROP55 to get $5 in points. Join Drop today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.